What the FTX is going on? If you haven't heard by now, the crypto trading exchange, the FTX exchange, has been at the heart of a major financial scandal. But what does the collapse of the FTX trading exchange have to do with the COVID narrative in particular? One might think that these seemingly unrelated topics are completely distinct from each other. However, on closer inspection, it seems that they are far more closely aligned than they may seem on the surface. And shockingly, the connection goes way deeper and points to a much bigger problem. In tonight's episode, I'm not going to be dissecting the finer details of the FTX collapse and what it means for the world of blockchain and crypto. I'm just scratching the surface today on the actual nature of the collapse itself to speak about this much deeper problem that this whole situation has revealed. Now, this story has been on my desk for some time since we originally saw it unfolding, and it didn't take long for me to assess that there's a much deeper story here that inevitably is at the heart of the problem that we're witnessing, and that's this idea of the common good and what it means to operate in accordance with the common good. And I'll be explaining more about that as we go through this episode, because again, you might be thinking, what are you talking about, the common good? What's that got to do with the crypto exchange? But before I go on to talk about this, you know, let's just touch upon some of the things that kind of point in that direction. Well, first and foremost, how money was being spent by this FTX is a really clear indication. And there's a whole murky set of links between various different organizations that the founder of the FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, we'll call him SBF from now on for short, which is seems to be the common thing to do rather than saying his name over and over again. So it's where the money that was spent between his organizations and all these organizations in the shadows that tell a deeper picture of what this is all about. The amount of money that was spent on political lobbying, $5 million to Joe Biden, $40 million to campaign donations, essentially bribing politicians, bribing regulators. And with the collapse of the FTX exchange, everyone's talking about the need to regulate the crypto market. And in fact, Sam himself was calling for the crypto world to be regulated. But it's often said that the world of regulation is not to protect the customer, but rather to protect the crooks themselves. And lo and behold, this fraudulent empire has now come to a collapse. But what's even more interesting, before I come onto the core theme of this subject, is that the collapse came about when a competing crypto exchange, the founder of a competing crypto exchange, called out the scam for what it was at FTX and asserted that FTX would not have the funds in order to repay those that had invested within the FTX exchange to be repaid if they called upon their funds. And as such, this created fear in the marketplace. People went to take their cash back. They wanted to cash out of the exchange. And as a result, this created effectively like the equivalent of the run on the banks that we saw back in 2008, 2009. And as such, the organization was caught short of hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars, and therefore left all whole rafts of customers without access to their cash and no clear visibility on where this cash has gone. Now, the irony of this and all the hoo-ha that's been made about it, and quite rightly, but the irony is that this is exactly how banks work. It's just that most people don't recognize that, in the fact that money is the promise to pay the bearer. And the reality is the banks only hold a certain amount of liquidity at any time in cash. Usually, I'd have to be quoted on the stats, but I actually came from the world of financial services. I left in 2012, 10 years ago. But at the time, it was a requirement for the banks to hold 8% of their assets, so that if there was a run on the banks, that they would be able to repay 8% of the total holdings, which, if you think about it, is not very much. However, the point is this, is that this crypto exchange collapsed in the same way that a regular bank would if everyone turned up at the door of the banks and said, I want my money. In fact, you don't even have to turn up at the door anymore. You can just log into your app or make a call and it's done. So that's a bit of a side story, but the hoo-ha that's made around it is ironic to me on the basis that this is how banks actually work. And the fact that it's crypto is no different to the fiat money system. But the real crux of the story here for me is the way in which the money and the whole pretense of this organization has unfolded. Because in the past few weeks, a photograph of Tony Blair and his buddy Bill Clinton sharing the panel on stage with a scruffy kid wearing a t-shirt, baggy shorts and trainers has been circulated around the web. Now, this event took place earlier this year in April in the Bahamas, which was funded by this growing outfit called FTX, a user-friendly crypto exchange, or supposedly so. And this crypto exchange was owned by this scruffy kid, Sam Bankman-Fried. As we said, we'll call him SPF from now on. Now, Blair and Clinton looked very pleased to be alongside SPF, gleaming with this almost aphrodisiac-like allure of the great connection to the wealthy few, because this gentleman at this time was supposedly worth $32 billion, this crazy story of accumulation. Now, what's crazy about this story is not just the collapse of FTX or how this organization even accumulated such funds and the corrupt ways in which this was allowed to unfold, when, you know, it doesn't take much of looking beneath the surface to see that this was almost an inevitability due to the shambolic way that this company was constructed. You know, you would have thought we would have learned something from the Enron scandal, you know, but here we are. And as always, as we've witnessed in the last couple of years, humanity does seem to do a seemingly appalling job of learning from history. But this gentleman, SPF, Sam, is a proclaimed effective altruist. And this was the penny drop moment for me when I started to just very briefly get beneath the surface of what was going on with this story. I was intrigued anyway because of our recent foray into digital assets, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. But this idea that this company is here for the greater good, and the company founder as an effective altruist, raised an interesting point of this idea of the common good. And I'm really going to spend the rest of this episode talking about this, in that his philosophy was that it's more important as a moral imperative to make a boatload of money in order that one can therefore later give it away for a greater good or greater causes. Now, on the surface of things, it's almost, you know, a seemingly innocuous aim. But if you notice, many of the challenges that we're facing right now are being created and solved by the philanthrocapitalists, those who are very wealthy in the top echelons of society. Many refer to them as the elites or the globalists. But they have this technocratic view on the world about how society should unfold for the greater good. Now, with this idea of effective altruism, and I'm not going to go into the depths of it, the simple distinction about effective altruism is really altruism that is optimized for present and future needs. And I'll talk more about that in a minute, because again, a lot of the problems of the world that we're facing right now are actually indeed caused by short-termism. You know, political cycles are like 4 years, so they come in, they want to make an impact, they create, you know, all kinds of chaos and then disappear. You know, company cycles usually work, corporate cycles usually work. The CEO comes in for 4 years, makes a mess, you know, makes a profit and then leaves. You know, there's a whole problem that is created by short-termism. But as a counterbalance, there's this long-termism, which I'll talk about in a minute. Now, effective altruism is based on the idea that the higher good outweighs any lower level misdemeanors, meaning that one can have good intentions and questionable means, which is a phrase, if you recall, if you've been following the show for any period of time, that I've used countlessly throughout the last couple of years, reasonable intent, questionable means, it doesn't matter if the means right now is damaging, if it leads to a far greater outcome for a greater number of people in the long term. But the big question is, it's a very subjective judgment. And as a result, this long-termism approach, this futurist approach, is that, or the idea that the far future, the distant future, should be given at least as much weight as the present in our moral and political decision making. And again, on the surface of things, that might seem to make sense, that we should be thinking about the future, particularly given what I've just said around short-termism. But with like everything that I've looked at in the last couple of years, where you get something that is radically out of balance, there is no equilibrium, whether you focus on one or the other, you create these binary situations. You know, when I was talking, I gave a talk recently where I talked about the importance of both competition and collaboration and how one can't really exist without the other. But people will often become a proponent of one or the other and at the critique of the opposite end of the scale. So there is, of course, merit in long-termism. And of course, there is a merit in short-termism. Both of them have different drivers. But if we only place our view on the future, then we forego potentially our present needs. And as a result of combining this idea of effective altruism, where, as I said, the primary distinction is really around the optimization of your choices, in the sense that you're trying to take this utilitarian, which I'll explain, this utilitarian approach to maximizing the benefit to most people, you know, using almost mathematical algorithmic approaches, which again is a warning sign because of the world is now almost delegating its responsibility to AI. That's a whole new story. And it does have a connection to this one as well, would you believe it or not? But this, to bring it back in, this means that under this effective altruistic state with a kind of long-termist view, means that any evil in the short term becomes justified by some higher level good over the longer term. Now, this should all start raising alarm bells to you, for any of you who have been watching over the last couple of years, recognizing these behaviors that we've seen, this idea of doing something in the greater good to protect others, and taking this idea that even if it causes harm to quite a lot of people, as long as the majority of people are okay, that's all right. Now, this is very, very concerning, because this is becoming a dominant philosophy, not just across the upper echelons of society, but it's beginning to trickle down into mainstream thought. And there's a lot of my concerns that has come out of the last couple of years is actually, rather than the practical sense, it's the philosophy that guides. And if you've been watching the Elevate podcast, we've tried to extract this bigger picture, thinking about what is it that's actually driving the behaviors of the world right now? What is guiding what is happening? Because even if you take a reductionist view and you extract it down to these people or this group of people, like the elites or the globalists or the technocrats, which is all too common, you have to understand what is driving them, what's at the heart of what they do. And it's too easy to say they're just evil. You know, even if there is evil in the mix, the reality is there is something that's a driving force. And this effective altruism, this long-termism, and this utilitarianism, which I'll explain more in a moment, is ultimately driving a lot of these individuals, where they have this heightened level of self-importance combined with an enormous amount of influence, money, and power. And it's led to this technocratic approach to, we know best for the world. We're going to make decisions because we're the ones who can and will make the decisions for the good of humanity. And even if that means we have to lie in the media, we have to block truths in order to get our will because it's for the greater good, any lower level misdemeanor or short-term evil becomes justifiable for the longer-term good. But who therefore defines the good? And again, that should also ring alarm bells, because if you look at the early stages of any totalitarian or authoritarian movement that could have resulted in devastation, starts with that same story of the greater world that will be manifested if you follow the desires and whims of those particular leaders. It doesn't take too much investigating to go back to World War II to look at the origin story of the Nazi Party and their vision of a greater society to recognize the craziness that can come with one who has too much power and influence in this totalitarian viewpoint that ends up in totalitarianism. Now, the core defect of this effective altruism in itself does tie itself to utilitarianism, which is essentially the advancement of a moral imperative, which is designed to maximize the good for the greatest number of people. That's really at the heart of what, you know, you can take the terms, you know, some of these terms may be new to some of you may be hearing these terms for the first time, others you may be common with these terms, but to get your head around it, utilitarianism simply means doing good for the greatest number of people, which as on the surface seems like a good idea. You know, even myself, as we've gone through the course of the pandemic, when I've been talking about lockdowns and all these other interventions, I've said, well, surely the aspiration is to minimize the harm for the greatest number of people. That, in a sense, is a utilitarian type of thinking, because it's saying we want to minimize the overall risk of adverse consequences, which is when you're looking at lockdowns, they're inevitably going to cause huge amounts of harm. They're inevitably, both in the short and long term, yet we're doing them to protect from this invisible virus. It's going to affect this many people adversely. So even in my own thinking, it's influenced by this utilitarian type view where you're trying to maximize the impact. However, the reality is utilitarianism in itself is untenable as a philosophy. There's many problems to it, and I'll do a whole episode on it just on itself because it's just a fascinating subject. But one problem is that it offers no means at all to actually discern when the motives, remember the what seems like reasonable intent, when that motive becomes corrupt. There are many ways that those motives can be corrupted and masked, conceptually, not physically. And that leads to, you know, a misunderstanding around what becomes the common good and who gets to decide what is the common good. And this, to me, is at the crux of many of the issues that we're facing right now, is you have these hugely influential, powerful individuals who have taken on these kind of guiding philosophies, who believe their view of the greater good is the greater good. So, you know, historically, you might find that institutions like the church or civil societies will have this kind of negotiated or agreed upon set of norms and values that guide and shape what is in the greater interest of society. However, those norms and values and morals, in fact, the morals, to me, this is all about the hijacking of the moral good, have been assumed by these technocrats, these philanthrocapitalists, who ultimately have influence not only over their own destiny, but over the destinies of politicians and entire political systems. So this to me is at the beating heart of the problem that we are witnessing in the unfolding of our society right now. Many of the fears that many of us share are underpinned by the fact that there are these individuals out and groups of individuals out in the world who are operating in this way, and they have the power to do so, and that power is unchecked. So furthermore, on this idea of utilitarianism, is that good exists on the same plane as one another and therefore can be ranked, that we can rank the goods. You know, I said that this idea that we can't keep check on the motives to see whether they've been corrupt is one problem. The next is like the idea that these goods can actually be ranked against one another. And again, they're subjective judgments. Even if you put quantifiable measures around what is the greater good, this whole mathematical approach, this algorithmic approach to effective altruism ultimately works on this rules-based system where one would add a value to what is good and what is deemed a lesser or higher good for the greatest number. But the reality is these human values, these human goods are entirely varied. What is valuable to you, what is a good to you, is different potentially to what it is for me. And the reality is you can't treat all individuals the same and say that society as a whole, which represents collections of millions and billions of individuals have the same common good needs, the same common needs, the same common wants and desires. That's simply not true. So again, when we see these blanket approaches to whether it's COVID, climate, or conflict, or whatever the flavor of the month is, we see this, you know, totalitarian style unified policy around the world, which comes from this ideology that underpins it. Now, as bizarre as this may seem to those of us who've been paying any attention for the last couple of years, let's draw out the kind of key links between the whole COVID story here, because for reasons that are still not entirely clear, favoring lockdowns, masks, vaccine passports, and all the things that came with that became part of this ideological utilitarian stew over the last couple of years. And it makes no logical sense because, as I've touched upon within the kind of my ramble here, it is that if you were to take a truly utilitarian approach, you would look at the collateral damage and the harms, both in the short and the long term, that were inevitably caused and will be caused by these policies. If you looked at my rant on Friday, I went off on one on these these harms after the witty article in the Daily Mail, which means that in this case, the approach taken by these technocrats is that if you want to stop a deadly pandemic, then for the good of all humankind, you will have to lock those like myself who are vaccine refusers in their homes. And if we sneak out, then you'd send out the police to put us back in line, or even if you're in some countries, beat the heck out of you, or maybe even lock you in a quarantine camp for the greater good. And, you know, when push comes to the shove, they'll force the injection upon you to kill us with kindness, quite literally in some cases. And this whole philosophy of doing something for others, doing something for the greater good, has been woven into the narrative over the last couple of years. In fact, the behavioral scientists know that this is a motivational psychological driver. So let's take a stock of where we are in this conversation. This opened up is about what the FTX is going on, looking at the fact this crypto exchange collapsed. That to me is only part of the story. The bigger story for me is what it represents. And this is what I'm talking about here. I will happily talk about, you know, as I said, this story's been on my desk for some time, and this is why my kind of my ramblings here are navigating my existing thoughts based upon what I've examined so far. But there's a lot more depth to bring on this. But I've been sat on this piece here around the greater good, because that for me just lit up straight away. I thought this is exactly what this represents, and it's really important we get our head around this. So, as I mentioned, you know, all of these restrictions, all these crazy things that we've seen have been proven over and over and over to cause all manner of harms. Yet those who have this ideology seem to overlook these harms and this greater good message, this effective altruistic view, as I've outlined, means that these lower down harms are secondary to the ultimate greater good of following this particular ideology. But what is driving this ideology? And as we've talked about countless times over the last couple of years, it's often money, power, and control that drives that ideology rather than altruism itself. It's simply the guise. And in fact, I recalled a term that Bill Gates used. There's a fascinating article from 2008. I might just do an entire episode on it, which is Bill Gates coining this term creative capitalism, which is essentially all about putting this veneer of doing the greater good on the front end of your business activities in order to maximize profit. And lo and behold, this is the world we live in, friends. And this is part of the problem. And it's those with the money and the power and the influence that are determining right now the greater good. They indeed have hijacked the idea of the greater good. And it's time that we take it back. And if you think about how crazy things got in the last couple of years, well, there's no more to be said on that. You know, we've been talking about that for 2 years. But ultimately, masking, social distancing, getting vaccinated, all of these became the symbol of being a good person, you know, the same as any other virtuous signal that one can take right now, whether it's veganism or, you know, following any single ideology around climate. Now, most of these things have little bearing on science or reality. It becomes tribal symbolism and group identity, solidarity, and we can just see these levers being utilized all around the world with any almost given call. And or cause. And FTX, at the heart of this conversation, was really good at using these ideologies to build relationships, and they threw hundreds of millions into these types of ideological causes to prove the company's loyalty to all the right people. Among them included many of the pandemic planning rackets. That's right. There's a deep connection between FTX and COVID that's been cultivated over the last couple of years. Let's take a look. Well, the New York Times trumpeted the Together study that showed no benefit to the use of ivermectin. Bizarre, that story, how they published the results of that story before they published the paper, not just within days, but 6 months gap between publishing the results and the paper. And you can see why once you actually get hold of the paper and realize how shambolic that paper was. But that study itself had over $18 million in funding from FTX. Now, why? Why would a crypto exchange be interested in the debunking of a repurposed drug in order to drive governments and people into the use of patented, more expensive pharmaceuticals, even when things like remdesivir quite clearly didn't work? You know, the inquiring curious ones amongst us would like to know why one would invest so much money in helping along a trial that was set up in a way that was never going to point to the conclusions that that drug was effective. In fact, at the time of that trial being concocted, I was contacted by one of the scientists that were involved in delivering the trial, who would not allow me to go on record, but they told me at the time that the doses being used would never lead to the verification that the drug was effective. And lo and behold, when we get the paper, now that it's out, we can see that the dosing structure did help skew the results to point to the exact result that the paper always wanted to deliver. And that is science, my friends, little s science, this day and age where science is ideological rather than scientific. Now, we know that that study and indeed the results were bogus. And interestingly, what a surprise, side note, a number of the researchers involved in that trial had also performed paid services for, guess what, none other than the major pharmaceutical companies, Pfizer, Merck, AstraZeneca, all companies involved in developing, guess what? Yes, the CV-19 therapeutics and vaccines that nominally complete, that they compete directly with ivermectin. What a surprise. No conflicts there, friends. But for some reason, the founder of the FTX knew that he was supposed to oppose these repurposed drugs, because that was the club that you had to belong to if you're going to be part of that scene. Yet he didn't know anything about the subject at all. Yet found this, helped fund this study to deliver the intended result. It doesn't stop there, unsurprisingly. Sam and his brother Gabe hastily founded a COVID nonprofit and have spent at least $70 million since 2021 on research projects and campaign donations and other initiatives intended to improve biosecurity and prevent the next pandemic. and I can do no better than to quote the Washington Post, which stated that the shockwaves from FTX's freefall have rippled across the public health world, where numerous leaders in pandemic preparedness had received funds from FTX funders or were seeking donations. You just can't make this stuff up anymore. The FTX, of course, also had a close relationship with the World Economic Forum, although the WEF has swiped their name from their website. And it also became the favored crypto exchange of the Ukraine government, the other virtue signaling cause that is of, and again, I'm very passionate about living in a conflict-free world, but I'm equally passionate about not living in this ideological world that is far from grounded in reality. And ultimately, this organization and the founder have plowed millions into this effective altruism movement, driving the greater good, putting this money behind projects that aim to secure humanity's long-term future. All on the surface seem like a good idea. Securing humanity's long-term future, I'm okay with that. But the ideological, irrational social constructs that have been created around these moral imperatives that have been hijacked by these technocratic elite are very concerning to me. What do you think? What's your take on this story? What have you been reading about it? To me, this idea that the greater good trumps all, and that greater good is defined by those with the money, power, and control, is at the very heart of the problems that we're witnessing in the world right now. Everything from what's happened in the last couple of years with the pandemic right through to future pacing, what could happen, because ultimately the conversation of crypto, digital assets, blockchain inevitably leads itself to the conversation around central bank digital currencies, where quite frankly, one potential outcome is that it is totalitarian, a totalitarian world neatly wrapped up in an app and a digital currency where every one of our transactions is tracked and traced, and you're awarded points in a social credit system whereby the decisions that you make are either rewarded or reprimanded based upon what the state or their funders determine is in the greater good. That is the world that we could potentially be living in. Now, of course, there are also other potential outcomes. It is not as simple as that. I want to deviate from this oversimplistic analysis of what could happen, but it is indeed a very real possible outcome. But the same thing still applies. This idea that the greater good, as defined by the select few, outweighs the views of the many who are the uneducated ones or the unwashed trouble far right conspiracy theorists, as we've been labeled by politicians like Trudeau, who actually, the Justin Trudeau, by the way, if you hadn't seen, lied under oath about his diminishing of those who chose not to be vaccinated. There are just 1,000 stories just in this one story. So let me know what you think in the comments. Our audience right now is radically diminished. We've been shadow banned on every one of our platforms. We're on our last legs on YouTube. Facebook have basically shut us down for the month. It's incredibly difficult to get our stories and conversations to you. So we've been working hard behind the scenes to build our Elevate platform out so that we can find a way to get our content to you in a censorship-free manner. We have big plans for 2023. We'll be talking about those in our event this month. In fact, this Thursday within the Elevate Network. So if you're not yet a member of the Elevate Network, be sure to go over to weareelevate.org. We're holding an internal webinar to our members on Thursday night to talk about our plans for next year. But on the conversation of central bank digital currencies, you know, this theme, what does it all mean for the future of crypto? Many of our audience are interested to know more. Where's it all heading? Are central bank digital currencies inevitable? If you want to educate yourself on the changing world of digital finance, then you can join over 200 of our members who signed up for our digital assets course, which walks you through the changing world, the financial reset, if you will, and educates you on all of these things that to many of us are new concepts, separating the good, the bad, and the ugly. You're bringing out what's different, what's the difference between a central bank digital currency and a digital asset. What can we trust when it comes to cryptocurrency? It's not a course that's going to teach you how to set up your wallet and start trading on crypto, although it does teach you, if you do wish to enter into the world of cryptocurrency, it does tell you what you need. But it's really an education course that brings you right up to speed with what's happening in the world of digital finance and what the opportunities are. And anyone that says that crypto is a gateway to central bank digital currencies on one hand is right, but on the other hand is showing how uninformed they are, because it's a much bigger conversation than that. And within the course, we separate all of that and get into the nuance of what it's all about. It's hosted by an amazing host who has spent the last 2 years alongside all of us challenging these issues and getting to the heart of what's really happening. And he was able, even during the delivery of the course, to call almost to the day that this collapse would happen, because he understands the power mechanisms and the rituals and the approaches that these that have the power hold in order to be able to see what's likely to happen. So if you haven't already taken our course, I recommend that you do if you'd like to understand more about the digital world. It's you can find more at weareelevate.org/ digital assets. You can check out that on our website. We are elevate.org/digital assets. And we'll be bringing an interview next week, actually, with the host of that course to kind of get an update on what his views are on what's just happened, what I've just shared with you, but also a prognosis of the kind of where things are likely to go from here in terms of digital assets on the basis of this collapse, what it all means, what some of the myths and misconceptions are that people have that could be barriers to people actually looking at something that is worth looking at. So there's lots more to come. It's one of the key subjects that we need to look at. We'll also be bringing you a number of different conversations around the financial subjects leading into Christmas, because right now, you know, the big topic of the day is the cost of living crisis still. What's happening out there? What can we do to increase our prosperity? What can we do to push back on some of the decisions that are being made upon high? There's lots more conversations to be had here, so watch this space. I want to thank you for watching live, and if you've shared this, I also want to thank you even more because we are really struggling to get our content out there, quite frankly, right now. You know, as I said, the major platforms that we are on, that we want to continue to be on, because you know, it's no good just being in an echo chamber where we're all having the same conversation. We want to reach much further beyond that. And ultimately, our goal is to create our own platform where we are free from those challenges. But right now, we're still here on YouTube, Facebook. We can't go live on. We're Naughty Corner. We can't even post on Facebook at the moment. I think Twitter, we're still there. So hello if you're watching on Twitter and hello if you're watching on YouTube. So do us a favor if you can, please share this episode. You know, if you're part of Telegram groups and other communities, share this episode. Each one of us has a duty, I think, to get this kind of conversation out there. And I know that there's many of us out there who want to understand the deeper picture of what's really driving all these things. And hopefully this conversation today has gone some way to addressing that. But as I said, you know, I've got a browser full of tabs of research on this whole subject, the FTX scandal, and there'll be more on this. So watch this space. Thanks for tuning in. Again, if you want to check out our course, that is wearelevate.org/digital assets. Thanks again. I'll see you on our next episode. I look forward to seeing you soon.